The Arctic research base at Ny-Ålesund in northern Svalbard is almost deserted. In the cold, dark Arctic winter, with a few hardy marine biologists, I walk through the crisp, frozen snow along the starlit jetty. The icy wind is whipping up the water. Yellow floodlight greets us at the end of the pier, where the research vessel Helmer Hansen is waiting. Built as an ice-going fishing vessel, these days the only trawling she does is for samples of marine life as she takes scientists out into the polar night. As the Helmer Hansen leaves the harbour, in the warmth of the instruments room, cruise leader Stig Petersen settles into his chair, watching our movements on the various screens. This two-week journey hopes to uncover the winter secrets of the southern Arctic Ocean and the Fram Strait. Since 2012, Stig and his colleagues have been making winter expeditions here around north and western Svalbard. Previously, very little was known about what happens in the ocean here during the 6 months of winter, when it's permanently dark.
We have a set of observatories which are permanently in the fjords here, measuring temperature, salinity, oxygen, light, chlorophyll, and the movement of plankton. And then we add to this by using our modern research vessel to go on more expeditions for shorter periods of time, 2 weeks, to take samples. Then we take samples with plankton nets, with trawls, and all sorts of instruments.
Downstairs on the laboratory deck, a hatch is open to the cold ocean, where chunks of broken-off glacier ice float by and seagulls glide silently overhead. German scientist Søren Hefke and his colleague Lucas, wrapped up in parkas and woolly hats, are unravelling a long net. Søren is hoping to catch some tiny shrimp-like creatures, or copepods, called kalanas.
At the moment we're just checking the net to make sure that the bucket in the end is closed properly and we don't lose the sample that's filtered through the net. Next we're going to attach it to the wire and then let it down to close to the bottom. From there we will then lift it up slowly until we reach 200 meters. Then we will drop down a weight that's attached to the wire, and when it hits a mechanism down at the net, it closes the net, and then we can lift it up and only have the certain water layer that we want. And we are now going from bottom to 200, and this is the depth where the copepods that we are interested in have overwintering. Now we have to make sure that the net is open properly so we get our plankton in. Of course. Okay. Now it hits the surface and it's going down. Yep.
Back in the ship's lab, Søren explains what this is all about. He'll be taking gene samples from the tiny creatures in an attempt to solve a great mystery for biologists. During the dark polar winter, what makes them almost literally tick? How do their biological clocks work when there is no light?
Usually these copepods in spring or summer, when they're active, at night they are coming up to the surface to feed, whereas at day the fish can see them because there's light around. They go down to deeper waters where they are safe. And it's supposed that this internal clock is, for example, used to control the rhythms. Therefore, it usually needs to be synchronized with light. But now it's a question, how do animals do it during the polar night? Because there is no light around.
That's what Søren hopes to find out. What these tiny marine creatures are up to in the polar winter is of key interest to the scientists on board the Helmer Hansen. They work around the clock. Ship time is expensive, and every minute counts. It is only since 2012 that this programme, run by Norway's Arctic University of Tromsø, has been able to carry out these winter scientific cruises. So what has changed to make this type of expedition possible in the last few years? Paul Renault, a professor of seabed ecology at the University of Svalbard, who's in charge of the logistics of the trip, explains.
There's a lot of new technology that make measurements under the ice or even all year round when we're not here. But also infrastructure has improved with ship operations and research stations that are improving and increasing in number in the Arctic. But certainly less ice makes it much easier to be here. And Svalbard is a very good example. 20 years ago, the fjord that we're in now would be completely covered with ice most years already by now. And now, just in the far reaches of the fjord, will we have sea ice.
So climate change is making it possible for scientists to come up here in winter. But at the same time, it's also changing the parameters they're measuring, says Renaud.
We're sort of addressing a moving target, and what we're measuring now can't say much about how the system operated 10 or 20 or 30 years ago. We have to rely on other measurements and the links that we identify now and how they're affecting the ecosystem now. We can try to backtrack and hindcast how these systems operated before based on the new knowledge that we have now.
Climatologists rely on a lot of indicators when it comes to looking into the history of the planet. Many of the Earth's secrets are stored in the sediment of the ocean floor. It's the creatures that live on and in this mud that interests Russian scientists Sergei Korsun and Olga Knyazeva from St. Petersburg University. Out on the deck of the Helmer Hansen, they're wrapped in thermal overalls with torches strapped to their foreheads. Right now, they're busy emptying a large square container which has just been winched back up from the ocean floor, as Sergei explains.
We just see the surface water which we need to remove to see the sediment. And when we are done with pouring out water, then we will sample the surface sediment.
So this is what you've just pulled up from the ocean floor, right?
Yeah, just a few minutes ago. The sampler is called the large box corer. It's supposed to take undisturbed sediment.
Okay. I'm studying benthic foraminiferans, large unicellular marine organisms, and we came here to study the seasonal dynamics because it is not obvious what is happening with them during the winter, during the pole night when there is little phytoplankton they feed on. And right now we're collecting our samples.
So why do we need to know that?
You see, winter is a huge part of the season, of the year. And very little is known about what's happening there with the organisms. And if we don't know that, we can't fully estimate their life. For example, if the whole population is eliminated during the cold period, or it's dormant, or it's flourishing.
Yeah, because they are abundant, numerous in all marine habitats, and that they have small size and they fossilize, which means that they provide record for the past 1,000 years, some millions of years. And so when people want to know that they obtained that record, they go to the sea, take a long course down to the sediment and analyze layers by layers our past. When we go into the past, people need to identify the chemical composition of the shell. And the question is, when do they calcify? Are the deposit layers of calcite? Is it only in spring when they feed, on the whole year round? And depending on the answer, we will say, okay, then the record they provide us with is just for the spring, or the average for the year. That's a tool to understand the past. And the second part is a tool now for biomonitoring. I mean, the sea environment is affected by, including man, yeah. Different factors, and we need tools to monitor the change. And foraminifers are becoming a tool of that sort, fairly inexpensive.
Sergei Korsun is involved in projects to monitor changes in the ocean. Here, he works with Paul Renaud. Paul has experience with monitoring systems in other parts of Norway, but with climate change making these Arctic areas more accessible, there's increasing pressure to keep track of the impacts.
When it comes to Svalbard, and in the other parts of the Arctic, it's a new territory for economic activity and human activities, whether it's oil exploration or fisheries in some areas that were not fished before, or increased tourism or increased shipping. And to study the critical parts of the Arctic ecosystem and the sensitivity of these organisms, we'll be able to see how much we have to adapt management plans and monitoring strategies to the Arctic, which is a system that we hadn't had much experience studying this aspect.
When the Helmer Hansen docks after 5 days in Svalbard's Kongsfjord, it's 10 in the morning and dark as night. As we head back up the pier, taking samples to the world's northernmost marine laboratory at the research station at New Ålesund, I ask Paul Renault how these winter expeditions are changing our perceptions of marine life in the polar night.
In the past 10 years or so, the few studies that have been performed in the polar night have shown that there is quite a lot of activity, much more than previously thought. And it seems that some of the processes that are critical for the functioning of Arctic ecosystems, such as primary productivity, are cued by processes taking place during the polar night that, for example, bring nutrients to the surface waters. It's not that when the light goes out, everything stops functioning.
And this time next year, Renault will be back with another crew of scientists on the quest to unlock the undersea secrets of the polar night. From a dark and icy Nualusund, for DW, I'm Irene Quayle.